this morning, you've got time for a hot home-cooked breakfast. Delicious and piping hot in only 3 microwave minutes.
Yo, pretty packages of Frosted Delights.
Look, it comes with a toy. I like that. I want a number 4, number 6, and throw in a plastic donut.
Just enjoy the gritty crunch. It tastes just like chicken. Wrappers of many bite sizes.
Man, are you freaking blind? It's a rock.
All mixed in the pot full. Mama's homemade from scratch. Well, not quite. Toasted over flames. They be tasting quite right. All hell King Neptune and his water breathers. No snail thing too quick for his water feeders. Don't waste time with your net. Our net worth is set. Ready, go. Many know others.
What?
We be the colors of the mad and the wicked. We be bad. We be brick it with the 24-hour sign. Shower mind habits while you dine like rabbits with the crunchy, crunchy carrots.
That's chicken.
Gotta have it super fast.
A whole line of breakfast you've got time for.
Super fast, super fast. I couldn't last. But just in time for breakfast. Keep it true, keep it true. Forever blue. The night grows after's aluminum. A crucial fun, aluminum. The sea is radioactive. The sea is radioactive.
All hell King Neptune and his water breathers. No snail thing too quick for his water feeders. Don't waste time with your net. Our net worth is set, ready, go. Many know others.
What?
We be the colors of the mad and the wicked. We be bad, we be brick it with the 24-hour sign. Shower mind habits while you dine like rabbits with the crunchy, crunchy carrots.
That's true.
Gotta have it super fast.
Super fast, super fast. I couldn't last. But just in time for breakfast. Keep it true, keep it true. Forever blue. The night grows actors looming up.
Their most recent album, Plastic Beach. That was Gorillaz there, and they're joined by De La Soul, and then Gruff Rhys from Wales. And that was a Super Fast Jellyfish, the most cartoony song, I think, in the Gorillaz repertoire. And, of course, they are coming to town. They'll be playing Wednesday at the... It's been renamed now to the Rogers Arena. And they'll be joined by Nerd, N-E-R-D. And it should be a great show. I have tickets, and we do have a guest here. But before we do any of that, let's tell you the name of the show. This is Exploding Head Movies here on CITR's vibrant, eclectic, super vast, yes, community radio station CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You can find us on the web at www.citr.ca. My name is Gak, and I'll be with you for the next 90 minutes or so. And you can always just call us here at 604-822-2487. You can also email me with the old show name, radiofreegak@gmail.com. So today, we are going to be exploring the idea of virtual bands. And I'm joined here in the studio with an animation expert. He's a man who's watched many a cartoon, except you might actually be paid for it, as opposed to a lot of other people I know here. So
it does count as research at some point.
It does. He can actually get discounts for it, and he just writes it off. He's like, well, I was just at home. I was researching. But anyway, there was welcome, Janos Sitar.
Hey, Gary.
How's it going?
It's going well.
Good, good, good. So I remember you proposed this idea to me a couple months ago as part of what you were dealing with. And what drove you to the idea of a virtual band?
Well, it's one of those things that kind of keeps popping up, and it's actually popping up more and more often. But the idea of a band that exists only in cartoon form is not something totally new, but at the same time, it's something that people have explored in very different ways.
Okay. And what's your tie to animation, as I sort of build up the hype that way? Like, obviously, as kids, there's always a strong pull about the idea of cartoons, you know, waking up obscenely early Saturday morning when you can't be bothered to wake up any other weekday to watch cartoons. But what pulled you in?
Like animation in general? Or?
Yeah, animation.
It was just something that was always sort of in the back burner, but at the same time, when I was in school, no one ever really seemed to talk about it. It was like almost a taboo subject. And even when I was in school, it actually was a taboo subject, and it, to a certain degree, because it's been so infantilized, and yeah, it's actually a, kind of a tragic thing where, like, part of my whole reason for really hyper-focusing on this one aspect of animation studies is because animation studies is actually, like, it's really underdone. This is also my plug for people out there. Please study animation. There's a lot. If you're interested in media history, there's a lot of work to be done.
It's kind of interesting because I mean, there's also the same parallels with television history as well too. I mean, there's only a few people focusing on that. I mean, most of the popular culture or I guess dialogue of the past is always focused on film foremost, and the music as well. So I mean, TV is always just still sort of really considered too new for it. But I mean, that's something that's burgeoning. But I mean, animation is still. That's something that's existed for quite some time. I mean, it's kind of weird.
TV is also the bastard child of radio and cinema, so it's the ugly stepchild that no one wants to deal with.
That's right, but I mean, it is basically the cultural force that it is right now, anyways.
It dominates most of our lives.
That's right. So, what? How about music and animation together? Is that something that's been existing for a while then?
Since the beginning. Before sound really took off in 1927, SoundSync actually existed well before, and the Fleischer brothers, who also created the rotoscoping machine and the claw machine, actually, as well. So anytime you're ever actually, like, fishing for toys, that's an invention of the Fleischer brothers.
The claw.
Yeah, the claw.
Oh, hail the claw. As everyone knows from Toy Story, another animated film, but so the Fleischer brothers.
Yeah, they invented their own SoundSync system, and they were actually the inventors of the bouncing ball. That was how they got audiences initially interested in their project, and because it was a really, like, heavy technological undertaking, you can really equate what happened with the Fleischer brothers in the early 1920s with all of the contemporary issues around technology and especially proprietary formats.
Okay. Now, the bouncing ball, that it just seems to be one of the things that's existed for a while, but what prompted them to do it? And
they were trying to figure out a way to get people to sing together in a group. It was the first time that they were actually, because at the time, all music in movies was being performed by a live piano player or any sort of musical accompaniment. Movies were never silent, and movies have never been silent.
Right.
But at the same time, what they were trying to figure out is how can they, you know, latch on to popular songs of the time? How can they sell their technology as well? Because they were technologists at the heart. Animation and technology are interrelated objects. You can't pry them apart, except for maybe with the flipbook, but
right.
You're still dealing with some form of technology.
So you're basically effectively saying that the Fleischer brothers invented karaoke.
Yeah, basically.
Or, yeah, not really.
Well, it's the first time that animation also becomes an interface.
That's true, because what other interactive elements would animation, I guess, have at that point, I guess?
At that time, there were, like, media wasn't really interactive. Reading sheet music was about as far as people really went.
Okay. So that definitely makes for a good thing. So it's, I think actually if originally we were talking about thinking about including a little bit more discussion about that, including some more music that way, but at some point it drifted more to the idea of a virtual band.
Yeah, because at the same time the Fleischer brothers did borrow from people like Cab Calloway. They got famous jazz people of the time to perform in their short animated films. And also the Warner Brothers, that's actually the Looney Tunes, the only reason they got started was another way to promote the music properties. Sheet music was really the primary way in which record companies at the time could really make money off their properties.
Because otherwise, I mean, at that point, records like the Wax Cylinders, the 78s, the 45s were still something that weren't fully ubiquitous. I mean, the first million seller, I think, was an opera single from 1907, which you think of how much money it actually cost, but yeah. No one could really actually buy it themselves.
Yeah, I mean, because music used to be something that we did collectively.
Right.
The majority of music you would have heard at the time would have been performed by someone, not coming virtually from a can.
That's right. Yeah, the sort of the ghostly presence that way of a voice without a body.
And karaoke does mean empty orchestra, I think.
That is true. That's right. Karaoke.
Oh, Japanese.
Oh, they have words for everything. Okay, so we are going to be playing a whole bunch of virtual bands here. So I think the important thing right now is that we're going to sort of set the tone here of what a virtual band is going to be defined as here, because there's going to be a lot of blur. Of course, that's a pun for what's coming later. Unintentional puns are evil. But at the very least, what we're going to do is the idea of, specifically with the range of cartoons, so we're not going to focus on, like, puppets. Like, unfortunately, it'd be great to have Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem involved.
Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, the Sesame Street and Muppet Show also relied on animation at times as well.
That's so true. Yeah, all the in-between bits for Sesame Street. Yeah, very avant-garde stuff.
Yeah, but because of the nature of the focus of my field, I have to stick to things that are animated.
That's right. So what we're going to do is actually going to kick off with... we're not going to start with one of the first cartoon bands there is, but I mean, this is basically the song that everyone associates with a cartoon band. I mean, it's been referenced since The Simpsons and everything else as well, too. And, of course, they started off as a comic book. And so these will be the Archies. And what can you tell us about sort of, I guess, Archie Comics first off, and then sort of their animated history?
I actually mostly know Archie's from the comics. I actually haven't even had the chance to really research the animated aspect of Archie Comics. But they were really my first influence in the comic book world. And the comic book world and animation are related. They're siblings. A lot of times a comic book can be seen as a storyboard for animation. It's also not surprising that at the time that the Archie comics are really taking off in the 60s as well, they're borrowing from contemporary trends.
That's right. So. Yeah, because, I mean, the time that, I mean, once you hear this song, obviously at this point you're just like, of course. Mm-hmm. But in the 1968, there was a big bubblegum pop wave amongst the psych and everything that the Beatles were doing as well, too. And actually, technically, the Beatles could be considered a virtual band in some ways, right?
Yeah, the Beatles are fit in a very strange place. Because they did have a TV show that did focus on their songs, but they were a pre-existing band that then just became animated. And of course, I mean, everyone's been influenced by Yellow Submarine. It's a touchstone for animation, and especially the psychedelics and everything else. It's such a cultural gem, and it's kind of weird that they're remaking it in 3D.
Yeah, it's gonna be an odd thing, but then again, the Beatles property has been extended multiple times repeatedly anyways. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of extended because the Beatles became, next thing was the Monkees, which was sort of like a pop or an artificial band based on the Beatles. And this song was rumoredly offered to the Monkees, but Mike Nesmith, actually, when he heard the song, he was told that he was doing it. This was sort of like in the time of Head, when they were sort of drifting away from like the Last Train to Clarksville, and he punched a wall when he heard this. But I mean, that's a little anecdotal, because there's actually a couple songs like with this that have that same song title. But this will be the Archies. We were just basically a whole bunch of session musicians. They released out 3 or 4 albums. I found like a list of songs that just go crazy, which you didn't think that would be the case. But we're gonna stick with the Archie Comics theme here, and we're gonna start off with a very obvious cartoon song here. So here are the Archies, and you can find this off the Greatest Hits compilation. I think it came off the Excellent Archies thing from 1969. But Sugar, Sugar.
Sugar on it, honey. Just because fall is in full force doesn't mean you have to be stuck inside. Bike to Work Week from November 1st through 7th celebrates cycling in all types of weather. Enjoy free, interactive online tracking and live competition. And on-route celebration stations offering free coffee, snacks, cycling maps, and fantastic prizes. Don't let the weather boss you around. Cycling to work and school will get you there full of energy and feeling guilt-free about skipping your gym workout. Check out the website for more info on station locations and for more tips and tricks on how to stay dry and comfortable during your ride. Visit biketoworkmetrovan.ca. Bike to Work Week is sponsored in part by CITR 101.9 FM.
And the Pussycats, a part of the Archie Comics universe, and that was Every Beat of My Heart. And, story behind Josie and the Pussycats.
Well, they're an offshoot from the Archie world. They actually started off in the comic and then also became animated, just like the Archies did in the late 1960s.
Okay.
Partially because of youth culture really just took off, and, I mean, the Beatles and their cartoon really helped push all of this.
That's true. And I guess it also ties in a little bit of the Motown thing as well, too, because they're all dressed up like in the, you know, the cat ears and the...
Yeah.
They have tails?
I think they do. They are supposed to have tails.
Okay.
But it is also interesting to see that it is interracial at the time. That's a pretty big leap.
Considering the time, because this came out like 1960, I have a bad memory. The series came out in 1970, but yeah, obviously they sort of appeared in the comic book first.
I think the comic book first came out in 63 or so.
Yeah, that sort of makes sense. Yeah. And, of course, at the time, it's like Hanna-Barbera production, and you're dealing with some other things. I mean, Casey Kasem makes his ubiquitous voice presence known all the time there. But then you had, like, some singers like Cheryl Ladd, and let's see who else was there. Of course, as usual with cartoon bands, the speaking voice and the singing voice, two separate people.
Yeah, that even happens in the new show, the Cheyenne Cinnamon Show, with Nico Case as the voice actress, but not the singer.
Which doesn't really...
It's
jive, you think, but
yeah, I know, but it's also the singing style of that character doesn't match Nico, but you know, you've got Nico Case right there.
That's right. Yeah, one of nature's wonderful set of windpipes right there. Now, Josie and the Pussycats had its own sort of like reboot and revival, correct?
Yeah, in 2001 they made a movie, actually filmed in Vancouver, and it starred not Rachel, what's her, yeah, it is her name's Rachel.
Well, that's, okay, the internet will save us here.
Yes, internet.
Rachel Lee Cook.
Yes, Rachel Lee Cook. I had Rachel Lee, and then I was like, wait, that's wrong.
It's Rachel Lee. It's missing another word.
Yeah.
And, of course, everyone's favorite Space Out girl, Tara Reid.
Yes.
But, yeah, that, actually, that film.
And not to forget.
Oh, we can't forget.
I'm terrible.
The internet
is what happens when you put me in front of a microphone.
Rosario Dawson.
Oh yes, Rosario Dawson.
Of course, a very big comic book geek herself too.
Yes.
Yes. So, the film. How did it sort of approach the entire girl band aspect as well?
Well, the thing is that they come off. They start off as being really nobody's, sort of playing nothing, and like they start the movie playing a bowling alley. No one's paying attention to them. It's actually a really smart movie, and kind of an attack on the way that corporate culture has really taken over the music industry at the time, especially. My favorite bit that I actually wasn't even expecting at all, because I actually only saw the movie for the first time about a year ago.
Okay.
Was Du Jour.
Oh yeah,
the fake boy pop band.
And it had people like Seth Green on it as well too. Yeah. Yeah, I remember it being a perfect, nice little satirical dig at everything.
Yeah, but it is the weird thing that it is also a hyper-marketed object, and so it does have a bit of... You do have to question the motives, but at the same time, it's interesting that they embedded all of this thing, especially about, like, music controlling people's minds, and that's what they were trying to use this pop music for,
right,
for mind control. And at the same time, that idea has come through repeatedly throughout the history of recorded music.
Yeah, and this is something that even the cartoon itself approached all the time as well. Because I mean, the girls were definitely popular,
mm-hmm.
but this sort of grew into, I guess, film sized life then.
But I have nothing but praise for that movie. They do a really good job of nailing something in a really interesting manner.
Excellent. All right, so let's listen to at least one track from there. If we have time, we might actually pull a Du Jour track, but we do want to focus more on the cartoony side. So. What song do you recommend off the soundtrack?
I really like the song that opens the movie. It has to set the tone, and it's a, like, because the question is the music going to be good or not? Because that's a huge challenge. And when they were just developing Hedwig and the Angry Inch, they knew that they had to make really killer tracks. Otherwise, it was just going to sound like a musical. And
that's, yeah.
There's always that horrible thing of when you get a movie or a TV show where someone has this hit number in the TV show or movie, but no one actually likes it.
Yeah. Which we'll be sort of approaching a little bit once we dig up Jem and the Holograms here. But
people still do love Jem.
Jem is still a big influence to this very day.
Yes.
And so let's go with Small Words. That is the theme, right? Track one?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so here we go. Josie and the Pussycats from the film. You're listening to CITR Vancouver. We'll be right back.
action. Who or what are you?
I am Synergy, a holographic computer designed to be the ultimate audio-visual entertainment synthesizer. Your father spent years developing me.
Father made you?
Yes, and now I belong to you. I can generate completely realistic holograms, like this.
Oh!
And I can change your appearances, like this.
Gibber, you never looked so good. Now that's an improvement. But that's even better.
All right. We sort of drifted there from the film to a little bit of cartoon wonder there. So what did we just hear there?
That was an opening from, clips from Jem and the Holograms.
Okay, so that actually was off the pilot then, obviously,
at that
point, right?
Yeah, that was from the first episode.
It's not like Jem was introduced to the computer Synergy, like, later on, or like...
No, they set up that device from the get-go.
Oh, next season. Oh, Meet the Holograms.
Yeah. Well, part of it is that Synergy, like, the computer really provides the character of Jem, because it is the amazing thing about Jem and the Holograms, I can't believe I just said that, is that it is about virtualization in and of itself, that Jerrica, through Synergy, turns into Jem, and that's the whole tacit agreement between the audience and the cartoon characters, that that's actually also part of gendered discourse, where girls are keeping the secrets of other girls.
Oh, okay. So is that actually part of the reason the story behind Jem, or how is Jem and the Holograms so formed?
Jem, no one knows who Jem really is in the series itself. I've actually never seen it all the way through. I'm halfway through season two right now.
He is watching Jem and the Holograms for research.
Yes, it is research. Part of it, because I'm also really fascinated when toys get introduced, because the other thing about Jem and the Holograms that's really fascinating is it's that time period in the 1980s where cartoons cease to be made for the sake of making cartoons, and they start becoming vehicles for toys.
That's right.
The toy and the toy company come first, and then comes a narrative that has to fit into everything else. So I'm always watching for the moment where a big hand comes in and introduces a new toy in front of the audience.
So in this case, was it Hasbro or Mattel, or did someone actually sort of come up with the idea and say, we need a band?
I'm not actually sure about the origins of it. That's the weird thing about some of these corporate products is, like, who's the author? Who actually came up with this? But then they did actually draft a female writer who came up with most of the show structure. She just had to fit in a lot of stuff around it, because they had certain goals, like all the characters were set. And so she just had to come up with stories that sort of worked around all of these preset parameters.
Okay. Well, that's, there's some crazy, I vaguely remember it, because this wasn't one of the things I definitely watched when I was growing up watching cartoons and stuff like that.
No, because they were so gendered, right? That's the part of the reason I never watched it either, is that you didn't want to be that boy who got caught watching Jem, or, heaven forbid, rocking up to it.
The thing is, I had definitely a little bit of a cult culture as well, too. I remember some people discussing about, you know, how they actually were secret Jem fans, and, you know, actually some point during middle school, they accidentally leaked out that, show Synergy Showtime, like, what? Yeah. What happened to him?
But it is a huge touchstone for women in our generation. Anytime I sort of bring up the fact that I'm watching Jem, the girls around me, like the women around me, and girls too, because they're not all... anyways.
Don't make this complicated, Jonas.
Women's studies. So it is a big touchstone for a lot of people, because it was the time when, like, that sort of 80s rock star mentality was coming through, and so it isn't surprising that that this show has such a strong following. At the same time, I would compare it to today's kids and how they're watching Hannah Montana, because it's the same story.
So for those of us who haven't seen Jem and the Holograms for a while, what's the brief story? What is Jem and the Holograms?
The premise is that Jerrica, her dad has just died, and he was the owner of a record company, Starlight Records. And
right.
So there's an evil guy named Eric who's trying to take over the company, and he's also got the Misfits, the evil band that the Jem and the Holograms have to go against, because it's also, you know, gender dynamics. So it's like packs versus packs, like, you know,
right,
one group of girls versus another group of girls, who are the good girls versus the bad girls.
I think we actually do have some of those Misfits around. Of course, we think Misfits, and we're thinking like Danzig.
Which is also the crazy thing, is that when you hear the Misfits music, they're supposed to be a punk band, but they're not in any way, shape, or form punk.
No, it's very electro, that sort of the 80s high energy, just highly gated drums and stuff like that.
Yeah, but at the same time, they kind of look like the sort of like Poison, like glam metal.
Oh, the hair metal bands.
Hair metal bands, thank you. So they're kind of in between, because at the same time, it's more fashion punk than... The weird thing is that the Misfits would actually fit better now.
That's true.
than they probably did at the time. But at the same time, punk was such a just weird label that kind of got thrown around.
Well, a lot of times, I mean, it sort of extends a lot towards virtual bands as well, too, because a lot of films that dealt with punk in the 80s and whatnot, it sort of went the entire gamut of, like, actual punk to, like, weird new wave, and then just sort of, like, edgy sort of pop that, you know, you sort of combine all together, and you're like, that's not really punk as we see it, you know.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think Luke Meat was talking about how the first time the disparity between the Clash's "London Calling," the cover of that album, and the songs on it.
That's a huge disparity. Yeah, I mean, the entire label of punk originally, before it, I guess, sort of codified, was the idea is like music by non-musicians, like amateur and whatnot. And
whereas the Misfits are hyper professional, they're hyper performed. They're, you know, the first time they even ride into the show, they're riding motorcycles in the shape of guitars.
I think I want to do that. All right, so it's just a little bit past after 8 here. This is Exploding Head Movies here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. We're joined here by Jano Sitar. And why don't we listen to some gem right now? So we're going to run through about, I don't know how many clips here, but some of them are short. Some of them will actually have full songs. We'll hear Gem and the Holograms. I think we'll even hear the Misfits as well, too.
Well, the crazy thing also that we should mention is that there's no album. There is the Gem and the Holograms. You can't find it anymore unless if you can find the tapes that they sold at the time. They never repackaged the whole thing, and they've never re-released it for whatever reason. I don't know who owns the properties, but they are holding on to it.
Because I figured at this point, I mean, there's the 20-year nostalgic period that sort of kicks in. I mean, at this point, we're talking about it, so that suggests that there is some sort of undercurrent of demand. But at this point, yeah, could it be licensing? Could it be the original animation team? Could it be, I don't know, the toy companies?
I think it's just, the toy company must just be holding it, and somewhere there's a weird, probably legal deal that's probably explaining as to why, because also, if they could have exploited it, they would have.
Yeah, give it time. I'm sure they'll figure it out. So anyways, let's listen to a little bit of Gem and the Holograms here.
I've arranged a battle of the bands in the park tomorrow.
And we're gonna win.
What to do?
Stay out of my way, or else.
Or else what?
You will find instructions in the earring box. Follow them.
There's nothing there.
I am waiting for you, Jerrica.
Well, let's go. This is the weirdest thing we've ever done.
Welcome, Jerrica Benton. Come. Continue to drive forward.
What? Through the wall?
Do not be afraid. Things are not always what they seem.
Go on, Aja. Hey, I'm crazy, but I'm not that crazy. Go ahead, I have a hunch. Okay, hold on tight. It's not real.
And the winners of the first annual Starlight Battle of the Bands are...
There's music in the air, news is in the making, music in the air, something big is breaking. Wow, look around at the sight and the sound. Did we take you by surprise that you can't believe your eyes?
Janos, was, we need to hear you, Janos.
Yes?
Was that only the beginning?
That was just the beginning.
That was only the beginning. Okay, that was a whole lot of Jim Hunt and the Holograms. We heard a little bit of Misfits there, some other like clips from the show, and a lot of that, as we described the song style there, it's very much like that. Mm-hmm. And as we start talking off air here, a lot of the cartoons sort of relied on that sort of house style of music. So, I mean, you get sort of like the big hits, like whoever does the theme, or maybe there's a special guest, you know, like the ubiquitous Harlem Globetrotters, or, you know, the Three Stooges always appeared a lot as well. But the idea is that you always just have weird guests appearing all the time, and sometimes a special song will be for them, but they may not necessarily sing it. And the rest of the songs are usually just done by whoever, just a whole bunch of like LA session musicians.
That's part of the fascinating thing to me, is that a lot of these bands are, like, because of they're coming from a cartoon world, the band members are really disembodied. They're meaningless almost. It's,
yeah.
Which is really fascinating that they're irreplaceable components, but also that, I mean, if we talk about the whole du jour thing, like that's, you know, that's the Menudo model, right, of the boy band that just, you keep just replacing the members once they get old enough.
Yeah, it's just, they're swappable parts, you exactly. know, at this point. You don't sound like this anymore, you don't look it, you can't do the part, it's, well, we got this other person waiting in the wings.
Yeah. So, but that's also what a lot of people get really upset about, that manufacture of music, because it's supposed to be this artistic endeavor, and instead it turns into this very corporatized model that just, you know, is churning away. I mean, I don't think Menudo's ever stopped.
Yeah, I think they're still sort of checking. Even Ricky Martin was on it for a while, yeah. and then it's technically still going. I mean, if you're a big Menudo fan in the '80s, they're still around. They're not the original people anymore, because at this point they are far too old, if they're actually even alive. Now, amidst all the cartoons that you're watching as well, too, there's probably a whole bunch of other things that popped up of, like, you know, G.I. Joe having like a musical episode as well, too. The Transformers, another just like
Slither episode.
Which episode?
Cold Slither.
All right. For those of us who haven't seen G.I. Joe in a while, what was Cold Slither?
Again, it's the model that they're using. Cobra is now using music to take over people's minds, so they make this fake band. Cold Slither.
What did Cold Slither, what are you supposed to do? How are they going to take over the world?
By embedding hypnotic suggestions, subliminal messages in the music.
That's been successful a couple times, I believe. And then Transformers? I mean, Transformers always had that because they had Soundwave, the only robot that didn't actually turn into, like, a vehicle. He basically turned into a ghetto blaster.
Yeah.
Do you remember the song, what music sort of was tied to that at all?
I don't know if he specifically had any song tied to him, but I mean that theme song from that show is really it's really rememberable. And at the same time, as I've been rewatching Transformers to, you know, do the boy counter to the Gem and the Holograms, the score in it is actually really surprisingly good. And it's actually the same group of people. It's a husband and wife team, I think, actually, that did the bulk of those 80s TV shows. I'm still pulling through the research and finding out exactly what they did. But I'm becoming more and more fascinated by this specific group of people that made music for a lot of these really famous shows in the 80s.
That's right. And then, of course, if you actually watch Boogie Nights, if you saw the scene that Mark Wahlberg and John C. Reilly were in the studio, that song that they were writing as their big number one hit actually was a song from the Transformer film as well, which, you know, you didn't think something like that would age or become even like a punchline, but someone did remember it, obviously, and someone snuck it in, or like, obviously at this point it was P.T. Anderson. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, or actually, was it Paul Anderson or P.T. Anderson? One of them is the guy who's the schlocky guy who just comes up with, like, remakes all the time.
The real Paul Thomas Anderson, not the other Paul Thomas Anderson. The other Paul Thomas Anderson, who I think did Alien vs. Predator, which should have, you know, makes me wretch. But he really detests the fact that he's called the other Paul Thomas Anderson.
That's, yeah, I'm sure if I met him in person, it's like, I liked Death Race 2000, the remake.
Yeah.
He's like, didn't you see the Roger Corman film?
Yeah.
You know, I'm a radio man. Anyways, before I completely derail this train, since we're talking about more like boy aspects or like the more male aspect, I don't think there's anything much more male as metal, isn't there?
Yeah, that's, well, I mean, there are women in metal, but like it's still a predominantly...
But like, just from a fan base standpoint.
Yeah, it's dudes.
Yeah, it's very dude heavy. So, yeah,
but I mean, the history of metal and cartoons and comic books actually go back to like heavy metal and like the Mobius comic strips of like.
That's right. Yeah, everything that appeared in that. Yeah, I mean, Kiss always had cartoons that were purported that part of the ink had part of the blood was actually in part of the ink as well too. So you actually had a piece of Gene Simmons in your hand when you read the cartoon. But amongst everything else right now, there's actually, I mean, metal at this point has had a strong revival as of late, and part of it is just based on the enthusiasm of the fans, and one big fan is Brandon Smalls, who's a big animator from just like a whole bunch of like low-key things,
home movies
being a big one there. And of course, he is the founder, or the creator of, I'm going to totally mess up the name, so I'm going to say it, and you're going to say it, and we're going to see if we're even close. So it's Metalocalypse.
Yes, Metalocalypse.
Metalocalypse.
And the band is Death Clock.
If you haven't seen it, this appears on Adult Swim. Did Teletoon or anyone show it up here at all?
I'm not sure, because I haven't had TV in such a long time that I get it all through DVDs. So.
Right. But anyways, this actually does air on Cartoon Network. The overnight programming is Adult Swim. And the show is called Metalocalypse, and it's basically a little 11-minute cartoon featuring the biggest band in the world. And they are so important that governments have to interact with them, and they're Death Clock, and they're completely metal, and so incompetent. You know, beheadings and electrocutions and other, like, gruesome deaths happen all the time. And if they do something, it affects the world economy, just like in real life. But, so the deal was that, yeah, Brandon Smalls, amongst everything else that he did, he's a big metal fan, so he sort of pitched the show of being, like, all metal. Mm-hmm. And, of course, everyone's thinking it's, like, taking the piss out of the entire, like, thing. But, honestly, the songs are great. So what I think we're going to start off with is off the Death album. We're going to start off with Hatred Copter. Great rocking number. And, of course, it's going to have all the metal cliches in it. But, honestly, even though you don't have the visuals or anything like that, it actually is pretty funny here. So we're going to start with that. We'll play another little track after that. And who knows where we'll go next after that. But, yeah, here's Death Clock with Hatred Copter.
For the last 25 years, CITR's Shindig has been exposing Vancouver to the freshest, newest talent the city has to offer. Every Tuesday, starting September 14th at the Railway Club, we continue this time-honored tradition of three bands battling it out, and as always, the dreaded jokes for beer. This week's performers are
Andorra, Cameron Scott Fraser, and Narwhal.
Shindig every Tuesday night at the Railway Club, 579 Dunsmuir Street, doors at 9, first band at 9:30.
Four, five, six, Janos.
My face just melted.
What was the movie we just listened to there?
That was Death Clock.
Death Clock.
All right. And the song was Face Fisted.
Face Fisted. So in the midst of all that, yeah, there was the idea of a fist and a face coming together in perfect harmony. So, yes, yeah, so this is off of Metalocalypse, the famous cartoon. And, yeah, this was a fine line that creator Brandon Smalls had to deal with when making a metal show.
Yeah, well, apparently the music has been a runaway hit, which is also kind of weird. That's not usually, that hasn't happened so far. Where we could, the band, the fake band has gone to have a life of its own beyond the animated series.
Yeah, there's been some recent interviews with creator Brandon Small, and he said right now that he may have to hold off or even not make new episodes of Metalocalypse just because Death Clock, as him, and as I read, there's a couple other great artists on there like Tommy Blasha and then drummer Gene Hoglan. I'm sure all metal people are like, you're screwing up the pronunciations. We're going to the station now. Don't hurt me. Yeah, so at this point right now, they're popular enough that they're touring on their own and do the demands of, like, the vocals that, you know, he's doing, like, the entire speaking low singing style. Obviously, that's going to impact vocal work on his part. And then if he's touring, he doesn't have time to make a cartoon. So this is something of, like, a virtual band growing up to become an actual band, which is phenomenal. But, yeah, especially with something like the metal community as well, too, because if you're making fun of the metal guys, you better back that up.
Yeah, they will tear you a new one.
That's right. And
you don't mess with their metal.
I like metal. Metal's shiny. Here's some exploding head movies here on CITR Vancouver. This is Gak. I'm joined here by Janos Sitar. We've been talking about virtual bands, and we're going to start probably with, we're going to veer again back into the kids' land because, you know, we can't be all heavy and stuff all the time.
There actually isn't enough material.
That's true.
This would become the Death Clock Hour.
That's right, which, you know, some people would like. It's or, Death O'Clock.
I mean, we could run into the realm of, like, heavy metal, like the movie, and, like, American pop or even rock and roll. But those are movies that have music in them.
Yes. Like,
they're not really centered around a band.
That's right.
Well, so, I mean, they're centered around a band, but the band itself is not the sort of central object to the, you know, the creative work.
No, it's not like the axis everything orbits around. But but I mean, metal and cartoons, I mean, they're thick and thin. I mean, if you're, you know, in, you know, grade 7, grade 9, you're just at home, you're basically listening to metal, reading comic books anyway. So you think about, like, back in the 70s, like heavy metal, the artwork by Mobius, and you mentioned rock and roll. What was that again?
It's a 1983 Canadian feature film that actually had Debbie Harry, Earth, Wind and Fire, Iggy Pop, Lou Reed. It was a big production by Nelvana, which we all know, and we all grew up watching their cartoons. They're still around. Yeah. But it actually nearly destroyed the company because the production took forever and it was kind of a flop. It's actually been a cult classic, because people have watched it over the, like, in the years since, but, it wasn't the hit that they were trying to make. You know, the music's actually pretty good. I really am a fan of the big song in it. Debbie Harry does a great number.
Yeah. Who doesn't love Debbie Harry? And who doesn't actually like all those guys? You sort of think about that all the time. That doesn't sound too metal, but same time, too. Cartoons, you know, I think it was like Rats.
It's a post-apocalyptic future in which...
was it Metalotha? I won't say it one day. Metalopolyptic?
Yes, after Metalocalypse destroys the Earth, rats take over, and they play music, and this guy named... Mog, I think is his name. Mock. The big evil guy who's the biggest rock star in the world is trying to open this demon gate too. Like, but he needs the perfect voice that will unleash this special something.
It'll open the gate.
Yeah, but I mean, the movie is actually kind of hard to watch in parts. The score is really overbearing. Like, they cranked it to 11 the whole time, and there's not a lot of rest. And, like, the animation's superb, but also, like, way too much all the time.
Yeah.
So I think that was part of the whole thing, is that the audience suddenly was just, like, you're being basically almost, like, visually and audibly assaulted?
Audibly?
Yeah.
Visually audibly assaulted?
I mean, you're into a bit of assault, but it was...
No, I mean, yeah, because, I mean, honestly, a lot of times with films, you know, if you're trying to compensate, obviously you just sort of make it louder, more explosions, things like that, you know.
I think it was trying too hard.
Nobody likes trying too hard. Speaking of not trying too hard, we're not even going to try this segue here. So we're actually going to... you're listening to Exploding Head Movies here. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You have another half hour of this. Janos Sitar is here. We're talking about virtual bands. And we're going to tackle perhaps what was the first most popular one, even though there actually was almost like a weird spin-off of another thing. So the late 1950s, there's a lot of novelty records going on, as you know, the record formats changed from like 45s to 33s and whatnot. And at that time, you know, everyone sort of came up with the idea of like, okay, we're going to come up with a perfect little band gimmick here. And one of the easiest things you could do with a voice is speed it up, and it sounds really fast and high. And with that, there was a production in 1958, I think it was called like Nutty Squirrel or something like that. And there was a producer, a Hungarian guy, I think it was Paul Bedrosian or Garabedian or something like that. And he just came up with the idea of coming up with his own little version of that. And then he sort of sped up the voices, and that became Alvin and the Chipmunks, which at that point just existed as a music. There was the Chipmunk, the Christmas song that they had. And from that, it was actually able to parlay into a cartoon. So from 1959, actually, I don't know if this is from 1959. What are we doing here? We're doing, right, this song came out far after. So, of course, the Alvin and the Chipmunks have been co-opted a lot as well, too.
They basically popped up every single decade since.
Yeah, I remember the Chipmunk Punk album from, like, 1980, 1981 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then there's the really sort of the Jim and the Holograms era cartoon as well, too.
That's the one that I first got to know.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the squeakles of the CGI stuff that's appearing in the films. But what we're going to do is let's listen to the Alvin and the Chipmunks version of Woolly Bully. Because I'm not going to play a Christmas song right now because it's November, people. I see you take down the Halloween things right now and you're like, let's put up garlands. No, it's not Halloween. Wait, what's not Halloween anymore? It's not Christmas. I'm losing it. All right. Alvin the Chipmunks.
Where are you going with that, Gary?
I forget. I remember time travel. All right. Here's Alvin the Chipmunks with Woolly Bully.
There is no cord, my oversized friend.
It's music time. Have you ever heard the story?
kill.
All that applause, hold it back. Hold it back, everybody, please. Ooh. I'm hearing other music here.
Wow, that was mysterious.
That was most haunting. So that, did that song have a name?
I think it's Don't Go Telling a Lie.
It's kind of convenient because that's in the chorus, isn't it?
Yeah, very convenient.
All right, so that was from the 1970s cartoon Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids. And as we just sort of did a little research there, we sort of thinking, like, who's doing the music behind that all the time? And from what we read...
Herbie Hancock did the music on a special in 1969, but I was having a hard time finding out who the actual Junkyard Band was.
Yeah. Obviously, probably some session guys, but the theme, the Fat Albert theme, the dum ba dum ba dum ba dum, that was Ricky Sheldon and Edward Fournier. And that was another film or cartoon that was made into a really bad film.
Yeah, the remake, but part of the crazy thing about the remake of the Fat Albert, I guess it's not even like a remake, it's almost like a sequel, because they basically pop out of the television to help a girl with her problem, because her tears land on the remote control and it opens up a vortex inside the television, and Fat Albert and the gang jump out, and you know, they even like shatter their universe by having Fat Albert meet Bill Cosby.
That's unacceptable, actually, in many ways. But
actually, you know, the crazy thing is that it does actually hold true to what the show was like, because they did actually interact. Bill would talk to Fat Albert.
No, he actually was sort of like an omniscient narrator, or some sort of like person just swung by the neighborhood all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a very positive ghetto type experience thing.
But at the same time, there was a bit of interaction between them, but it just wasn't super direct.
Right.
But yeah, it was. I mean, it's the invention of it was created by Bill Cosby, and obviously trying to show a low income.
Hey.
Yeah, he does most of the voices, and also that they include music as part of it too. That they actually like one of the episodes is really centers around them creating a junkyard band that out of garbage that they find around themselves, that they find everywhere.
Yeah, from the cartoon, I remember a lot of like musical montages. They sort of like jamming with some sort of a number, an educational piece, something with the morals and whatnot, as we heard there about, like, don't go telling a lie.
Yeah, every single episode had a moral principle to it, and the song would usually reinforce that.
Yeah. Anyways, we have about 20 minutes left here. One thing we had to dig into is one of the weird Canadian artifacts amongst all this here, and the name Prozac should probably jump out to a couple people. If you listened to a lot during, like, the 90s and whatnot, it was like a weird...
You didn't have to try.
There's no trying.
They were actually nominated for Junior Awards for both their first two albums.
Well, the first album actually was pretty much, I remember at the time, it was a big bona fide hit. I mean, mm-hmm. there were like singles coming off that like crazy, played on much music all the time. And as you sort of told me, the people behind Prozac was a mystery.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I remember, like for, you know, the first while, no one had any idea who they were. And then slowly the news leaked out that it was a couple of guys from the Philosopher Kings.
Yeah, they're sort of like that kind of funk soul band from Toronto at the time. And yeah, it was a weird bit there. But yeah, it was it featured Simon and Milo. And it was the bassist and the keyboardist from the Philosopher Kings.
Yep.
Jay Levine and James Brian McCullum.
They did just release an album about 5 years ago, so they haven't completely disappeared.
No, That's yeah, they're still sort of kicking it. So yeah, it was like 19.
And they're still making music. One of them is the guitarist for Nelly Furtado. So
there's always room in the Canadian music world just to sort of at least get by and still like provide good music that way. So what we're going to do is we're listen to a couple tracks from the 1998 debut, Hot Show, back in the time before anyone knew who they were. So we're going to start off with Strange Disease, and then, if time permits, we'll actually probably listen to the song that you most know them for. You're listening to Exploding Head Movies here on CITR Vancouver.
A little sexual frustration combined with lack of motivation and a loss of concentration. I got a strange disease. Can't concentrate on work. My libido's gone berserk. Now I'm sweating through my shirt. I got a strange disease. 2 weeks ago, you said you'd never leave me. And here I am alone. And in this world of reckless happenstance, why do good things have to go away and leave you with nothing? Yeah, you left me with nothing. A strange disease. Hyper emotional sensations set by your television stations and unaffected by locations. I got a strange disease. I can't seem to get to sleep. I don't want nothing to eat. Walking up and down your street. I got a strange disease.
What did you have?
Become a friend of CITR and receive great discounts at businesses around Vancouver. Your Friends of CITR card will net you discounts on Commercial Drive at Audio Pile, Bone Rattle Music, High Life Records, and the People's Co-op Bookstore. You'll also save online at Band March Canada and Big Mama. It pays to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or visit us online at citr.ca.
Jazz is a word that means many different things to many different people.
The best definition of jazz that I know of is the jazz show on CITR with yours truly, Gavin Walker. Monday nights, 9 to midnight, with the jazz feature at 11 o'clock. Check us out every Monday.
Into that cartoony feel, of course, is those sort of fake British accent there. I know. Janis, isn't that a great song?
It's wonderful.
It's the best thing I've heard. That was Prozac, actually, with their big hit from 1998. That was Sucks to Be You, and that is a virtual band. All the videos appeared as the cartoons of Milo and Simon. And, yeah, once, I guess, the mask was revealed about who they were, the Philosopher Kings, everyone's like, brr.
Yeah, I recall like that, you know, my, at least in my social circle, people had a negative reaction to it. I don't know if that was, you know, universal, but it definitely there was such disparity between the Philosopher Kings and Prozac that it kind of felt a little too put on.
Yeah, it's still sort of that 90s feel as well about the idea of everything being authentic music and whatnot.
Yeah, well, it's at the tail end of grunge too, right?
That's right. And they sort of veered with the pop aspect of coming up like one of the most artificial creations there was.
Yeah, but I think part of it is that when the mask got revealed, that it did lose a little bit of some of the mystery that they were trying to go for.
Yeah,
which is a good segue to Gorillaz, because they actually initially intended to not tell anyone
Yeah, so at this point, Gorillaz, of course, they'll be in town on Wednesday at
so
Rogers Arena.
Forward to that.
We'll be there with bells on and masks, perhaps, because it's always Halloween. But at the very least, yeah, it's Gorillaz with Blur's Damon Albarn, and then the creator of Tank Girl, Jamie Hewlett. They were roommates at the time, since I think Albarn had just been dealing with a divorce from the girl from Elastica. And at that point, they just sort of bonded. And from what I read, they were just watching MTV and then just sort of thought, well, this is highly artificial. Why don't we make this as artificial as possible? So they sort of went on the same level as Prozac a few years after the fact. But as you were sort of telling, the reveal happened.
Yeah, well, because the whole thing is that they always wanted it to be this revolving group of people, because if you've got cartoons, why not? Well, you know, we want to work with some of the guys from The Clash. You know what? I would like to work with Del the Funky Homo Sapien. You know what? Maybe let's also work with Mos Def. Okay, why not?
Yeah, well, even including, like, the most recent one, Plastic Beach, they have, like, a couple Algerian or Middle Eastern orchestra sections. They got Bill Withers involved. There's some phenomenal collaborations
Danger
at this
Mouse
point.
Produced the second album.
That's right. They had Dan the Automator help on the first one, because Damon Albarn was introduced into this world, at least from the musical side, with his contribution to Deltron 3030, because mm-hmm. that was Dan the Automator, Kid Koala, and Del the Funky Homo Sapien. And from that, he sort of looked at, because they came up with an artificial world for that album, a concept album about the future. And then he decided, okay, well, let's just do a cartoon band featuring four characters that, you know, could be associated with, like, actual human analogs. Mm-hmm. But realistically, I mean, 2D, Noodles, Russell, and I'm blanking out on the drummer because the drummer's not really them.
Russell is the drummer.
Russell's drummer. You're thinking, oh, I forgot Murdoch.
Murdoch, yeah.
Yeah, the bassist.
Yeah, but part of it, too, is that it is kind of an art project at the same time, that they were trying to see how far, because things, you know, at the time period, there was all these boy bands running around. The sort of, like, you know, authenticity of musicianship had sort of vanished for a little bit. And at the same time, Albarn himself was trying to actively step away from his own celebrity. He'd gotten so big that he was just really, he needed to try to do something a little bit different. And now he's kind of like, this thing's bigger than I am.
No, it's almost like, as we were talking before off air, the idea is that he kind of lives in a cartoon already, in being like the pop world, being famous and stuff like that. And then he sort of realized, well, let me just sort of extend that on.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is we're going to listen to two Gorillaz tracks here, and then we'll see how much time we have at the end. We might just have something just playing up until the jazz show with Gavin Walker. But off Plastic Beach, and here they are joined by Mos Def. This is Sweepstakes.
Payday, you're a winner. Payday, you're a winner. Keep cool for my line. Scare money, broke money. More money, more money. So sunny, cloud breaker. Shine like a wave runner. Wild on a funky drummer. You can get it how you wanna. There's math and there's dealers and players and me. They say that they win, it's okay, well, let's see. You pay, you play. The rules of the trade. The math of the days. The times and the age. What you want, how you like. Aim high, man, why not? Some moon story, yours. Each and all of yours. Mathematics and dealers and players and me. They say that they win, it's okay, well, let's see. Set the dealer, every player, yeah, me. So you say, we will see. Play a play, A-OK. What you want, how you like. Aim high, why not? Sun, moon, and star of yours. Each and every, all of yours. Who's the winner, yeah, me. So you say, we will see. Cloud breaker, danger beats. Big freak. You're a winner. Sweet day.
money, more money, so sunny. Cloudbreaker, shine maker, wave runner, wild wonder, and drummer. You can get at it, how you wanna. There's madness, villains, and players, and killers, and me. They say that they run, that's okay, but let's see. You play, the rules of the trade, the math of the days, the times of the age. What you want, how you like, aim high, man, why not? So on this story, y'all, each and every all of y'all. Madness, villains, and players, and they say that they winning, okay, well, let's see.
Kids with guns, take it over. They won't be long. They mesmerize skeletons. Kids with guns, kids with guns. Easy does it. Does it easy? Does it make up something to say? Does it easy? Does it? They got something to say.
Off their 2005 album Demon Days, that was Gorillaz, that was Kids with Guns, fantastic second album there as it sort of goes in towards the Danger Mouse style. And in the background, off their first album, we're listening to Rock the House. So again, Gorillaz, they're playing Wednesday, Rogers Arena, opening NERD. Janos Sitar, our guest here, will be attending.
Thanks, Gary.
As I will be. And Janos, this was fantastic. I know, again, we've talked about this for a while.
Yeah.
And, of course, with Gorillaz, it's an easy little hook there to sort of dive in, and this turned out phenomenally, so...
Yeah, it was really fun. Thanks for having me.
That's no problem. Anytime that you have some other idea, some other crazy thing, after we watch some more cartoons, and you're always welcome back.
I'll come up with something.
Excellent. So, yes, if you've missed any of this week's show, Just hop on www.citr.ca. You can grab this as a podcast. Just click on the schedule. Track list, I may have to get that later because at this point I've totally forgotten what we've done in what order. And then, yeah, stick around. Coming up in a few short minutes is Gavin Walker with The Jazz Show. And then, after some overnight programming, Tuesday, 6 a.m., Pacific Picking with Arthur and Andrea. So take care of yourselves, and we'll see you in a week's time. I think I'm going to be focused on Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind.
Tap your toes and clap your hands. Come on, trace the globe and shake your pants. Just twist your hip and do the dip. Come on, shake your back, do whatever it takes. Gravitational pull, I have you making a fool out of yourself on the dance floor. Doing backspins, running man and more. Party down with vigor and candor. Come into the jam or look like a landlubber. And do the aqua boogie, win lots of goodies. Baby, pop the Gucci while the turntables is talking to me. It's awfully groovy seeing all the treasure and the booty. When the MC rhyme and the DJ spin, I want y'all to just get down. Now while the MC rhyming and the DJ cutting, I want y'all to just get down. And when the MC rhyme and the DJ spin, I want y'all to just get down. Now while the MC rhyming and the DJ cutting, I want y'all to just get down. Tap your toes and clap your hands. Come on, trace the globe and shake your pants. Just twist your hip and do the dip. Come on, shake your back, do whatever it takes. I wanna get down lower than Atlantis, going toe-to-toe with an enchantress. Get funkier than Funkadelic wearing Pampers, while you eggheads is on the wall preparing answers. Sharing transcripts while we over here dipping and dancing, rhythm romancing. Wallflowers giving no action, nope. All hours chilling and maxing, so relaxing. Opposites attracting, I'ma toss my hat in. Lost when the track spin, like I'm on a crack bench. Jiggling and wiggling, freaking booty, speaking to the cutie, so belligerent. No religion, just bunk the feed on. You'll feel reborn. Negativity, we just dead it like decon. Better lift your feet and just measure the beat on the pulse when it respawn. Tap your toes and clap your hands. Come on, trace the globe and shake your pants. Just twist your hip and do the dip.
You are listening to CITR FM and cable 101.9 or on the web www.citr.ca. Stay tuned now for The Jazz Show with Gavin Walker coming right